You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid. Why so? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. Hope you have had a good weekend, got to a farmer's market or two, enjoyed this interesting change in the weather. I don't think it rained enough to really do any damage to crops. I hope that it didn't, because everything looks so great after, you know, when we've had no rain for a while, and then all of a sudden rain washes off all the dust, and everything just looks bright and crystalline, and it smells really good. So I enjoyed that rain this morning. I hope you did too. Went to the Harvest Fair Awards dinner last night. I think it was 2 weeks ago. We had Marie Gortz and Annie Vercelli talking about the sort of revamped Harvest Fair and the awards dinner and that sort of thing. Certainly looked Grace Pavilion looked absolutely beautiful last night, and there were really wonderful moments, and there were some things that didn't work quite as well as they perhaps could have, and there were some very funny moments, and I'll probably be writing about some of those funny moments on my blog sometime this week. Anyway, it is event season. It seems like event season starts in May and it continues until, I don't know, November, and some of the best ones come in the fall. I guess the Hanukkah Regatta is just wrapping up. The after parties are probably going on as I speak. And coming up next weekend, we have one of the really best events, and that is Calabash, a festival of art, Gourds, Art, and the Garden, if I got it right. And we have returning for I don't know how many times, Doug Gosling. Welcome, Doug.
Hello.
And Ron Karp.
Hello.
Welcome back. So you've both been on too many times to count. So is this, what annual are we at?
This is number 11.
It's number 11, okay. Mm-hmm. And it's taking place next Sunday, October 2nd.
That's right.
From 1 to 5 at the food bank.
At the food bank.
In Forestville.
Cost is 35 in advance, 40 at the door.
It's 45 in advance and 50 at the door.
I think I'm 5 years ago or something. And it's well worth every penny. It's really a fabulous event.
It is. And, you know, as far as value goes, not only do you get to see all these unique and beautiful works of art, but we also feed you great local Sonoma County food and some of the finest wine that's produced in the area. So the value is just tremendous. But of course, my favorite part is the art.
One of the things that's nice is the food is just circulated. So you don't have to go stand in line. You don't, you know, it's like you're looking at all this great art and suddenly somebody offers you something to eat. Mm-hmm. And you can look at the art with a glass of wine in your hand. Mm-hmm. But there's also some other components. There are a few workshops, right? Don't you do, like, isn't there somebody there that teaches you how to decorate gourds?
You know, we're not doing that this year.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
Right. There are no gourd demonstrations.
Oh, okay. So there's just lots of art to look at, which is really good.
And music.
And, of course, they're in the garden.
Yes.
So tell what is the featured music? Is it still all gourd instruments?
It's all gourd instruments, although there are people playing other kinds of instruments.
But gourds are...
Yeah, that's sort of the primary reason they're there. Mm-hmm. We're excited to have Marcus James playing this year, who's sort of a local celebrity. He's an acoustic and electric guitar player, and he plays with Gourd musicians, mm-hmm. Both here and in Africa. He goes back to Mali many times a year and works with Gourd musicians, but he works with local African Gourd musicians here. Mm-hmm. So he's bringing a guy named Amadou Camara, who's going to be playing a Gourd instrument, a mm-hmm. stringed instrument called a Kamala Ngoni.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to say how many different types of Gourd instruments there are?
I think there are hundreds okay. all over the planet.
Yeah, that's what I said. Is it possible? I thought there might be too many that no one person even knows.
Yeah, and I have a prejudice for African music, so mm-hmm. I haven't really brought too many instruments from other countries, although we've had Brazilian, the birimbau, there before, and there is a bass sitar player, and a sitar is made out of a gourd.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the musicians are from Africa.
From Africa, yeah. So the music takes place sort of down in the garden, right?
There are several locations.
Okay.
One is in the garden and one is sort of in the main area where the tent is and the art.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then people can stroll the gardens. Are there garden tours?
There are garden docents who can ask questions.
Garden docents.
Yes, there are tours of the food bank.
Uh-huh.
But people can stroll the gardens at any time.
And, of course, this is a benefit for the Food for Thought Food Bank.
That's right.
And you're the executive director.
I am. And one thing that we're doing this year is we're unveiling a memorial for people that have died of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful installation in the garden that was designed by a local artist, Mark Brzezinski. It's very moving. And I think that people will really... find a lot of meaning seeing that in our garden now, which is quite impressive.
It's actually the first AIDS memorial in the county.
Really?
Yeah. And it's there's a water feature, and it sort of sits at the bottom of the garden, and there's a sculpture, and it is moving. I mean, mm-hmm. people sort of catch their breath sometimes.
Look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful.
And it also has an element of participation because people can write the name of someone that they've lost on a copper plate and then hang it like a leaf off of our arbor.
Wisteria arbor.
Yes.
Oh, really?
It's really beautiful.
So you write it on, did you say a copper?
On a little copper plate, a flat copper plate, and then that gets tied to metal on the arbor. And so when the breeze blows, you hear all these little pieces
of copper.
Oh,
God, what a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a copper leaf.
Uh-huh. Up at Russian River Rose Company, earlier this year, I think it was in May, I don't know if you know them, they grow beautiful roses and they have a fragrance garden. They have like 650 antique roses from Eastern Europe, fragrance roses, and they distill there on the property. And this last year, one of their trees, not a rose tree, another tree, maybe a willow, but I'm not positive, they had ribbons tied all over the tree. And then they had a basket with these nice little pieces of paper. And it was a wishing tree, and you could write your wish and then tie it to one of the ribbons, and there were lots of breezes, and they all, made that soft fluttering sound, and it looked just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I love things like that. So, mm-hmm. And then the wisteria arbor, so is it the sort of copper leaf that it'll just hang there forever?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really wonderful. I like that touch a lot. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the art itself.
Well, there are, I think, close to 120 pieces and mm-hmm. over something like 95 artists. So there's mm-hmm. more than last year.
Mm-hmm.
But the quality seems to be getting better and better mm-hmm. every year. It's really amazing. There's a wonderful preview at the
Quicksilver
Gallery
Yes.
in Forestville. In the window, I think there are about a dozen pieces. Uh-huh. And it's just amazing, the diversity of stuff.
Yeah, the diversity. I bought one piece when I was there. I think it was 3 years ago now. But I bought a piece, and somebody had taken two gourds. One just became the little mound of snow. And then the other one, they didn't alter physically the gourd much. They just painted it. And it's a penguin standing in snow, and it looks exactly like a penguin, and it's just, I love it. I was so afraid someone was going to outbid me, but I got it. It's part of the fun part.
You know, I think what's great about this is that, about the art is that not only is it all unique and beautiful, and these, you know, these are some of the finest artists in the county that are doing this for us, but it's affordable. Most of the art sells for an amazingly low price, so anyone can walk away and have a unique, collectible, and beautiful item for their home for next to nothing, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you think of Gord art as simply what you've seen, and I think what we see is Gord art that's maybe decorated with beads and maybe with
feathers
and sort of very traditional. It will blow your mind, the incredible diversity of what people have done with gourds. It's really something. The other thing, I was at the farmer's market in Santa Rosa yesterday, and I'm not going to get the full name of this farm right. It's Tole. It's the farm that's within the Tole.
Tole Lake?
Maybe it's Tole Lake Farm, but it's actually there in the park, is a little farm. And they were there with winter squashes and gourds. And to pick up one of these, because I could tell from some of the shapes, and they also had apple gourds, and I'm hoping I can do an apple gourd for you next year. To look at them and feel them and how heavy and botanical they are, and then just to think that through the process of drying, they turn into these incredible canvases. I just find that just amazing.
We grow the gourds, most of the gourds, at the food bank, which is why we started this in the first place. We discovered that we could grow gourds really well. And we store the gourds after we've harvested them in the fall over the winter, and they dry out in this little shed.
So that's, it takes just that one?
Yeah, it takes about, what is it, four or 5 months. And then the artists come and actually rifle through the shed and just find these sooty-looking gourds, and they get to clean them themselves. And I think that's part of the discovery and the fun of it, is that you get to reveal, you know, this beautiful woody structure.
And cleaning a gourd is not difficult.
No.
And it's really quite a nice, I've done one. Actually, I've done more than one, but I did one for you. And cleaning them, it's really sort of fun. And working with a gourd is really satisfying. I think it's a really great thing. And of course, this is one of the major benefits of the year for
it's really our most important event. And as you know, as most people probably know, HIV is still quite an issue in this community, and especially
I think most people actually don't know that. Well, I think it's important to revisit that regularly, because I don't think the general population really does realize.
You might be right. Well, we're serving currently 650 people, and you know, with the economy the way it is, it's difficult for a lot of people to have enough to eat. And when you're dealing with someone that has a disease like HIV, it's just impossible to live without adequate food. And so it's our mission, really, to make sure that all of our clients are properly fed, and no one in Sonoma County has to go without food with this disease. And Calabash is a big part of the support of what we do. And, you know, so we hope to earn a big portion of our budget off of this event so that we can continue to do this work.
How has the current economy affected Food for Thought?
Well, I think it's been tough for everybody. You know, I think all of us are feeling this economy in one way or another. For us, we just have to work harder to raise the same amount of money. We've also lost all of our government funding.
I was wondering.
So that's been tough, but we've got a very dedicated group of volunteers, over 500 people, and a good board of directors and a dedicated staff. So we're managing. I mean, I wouldn't say it's easy, but we haven't had to have a waiting list, and everyone's getting food. So a lot of that is the generosity of local farmers, businesses, people that donate food and money and help us with this event and other events that we do.
Oh, great. And it's such a great organization. And it is, if you've never visited, you should go. It's a really happy, beautiful place. I think it's quite lovely. And it's on, what, Railroad in Forestville?
Railroad Avenue.
And you can go by to get tickets.
You can come by and buy tickets at the food bank. You can also buy them on our website at fftfoodbank.org. And the FFT is the initials of Food for Thought. Or you can call us, and our number is 707-887-1647.
That's 887-1647. 24/7.
Right, or you can just show up on the day of the event mm-hmm. and buy tickets. Mm-hmm. And, of course, every little bit helps.
Yes. Yes, you do really good work, and I really appreciate it. It's great to see you, Doug. I didn't see you often enough. You are just the most amazing gardener in the planet. And sometime you'll have to come back and talk about the things that you're doing in Africa. You know, it's been a while since we did that, but we should do that sometime, maybe this winter.
Mm-hmm. Love to.
So good luck to both of you for the event.
Thank you.
I may be able to make it. I don't know yet, but I should find out Tuesday if I get to come. And I hope it's a huge success with or without me, and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
You bet, and we'll be right back. It's Mouthful. Thanks again to Doug Gosling and Ron Karp for coming in and talking about one of Fall's great events, Calabash, a celebration of gourds, art, and the garden. Fabulous silent auction of really beautiful gourd art. And we just heard from Chumani Diabate playing, you guessed it, the music was with gourds. Now we're shifting. I saw my friends... John Boland and Jim Carroll today. You may or may not remember them from the days of the paper and the Sonoma County Independent, currently known as the Bohemian. But John loves potatoes. And I'm sitting in front of this basket of really beautiful potatoes from Blankety Blank. You prefer to be called Denny?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, Denny Hunt, you're on, surprise, Blank Road.
Yeah.
So tell me, how long have you been growing potatoes there?
Just 3 years. This is our third year.
Third year?
Yeah.
Going to get you a little closer to the mic. And why Blank Road? Why potatoes?
Well, in 2009, the family dairy shut down.
And what dairy was that?
That was a Peterson dairy on Peterson Road. And I wasn't involved in the dairy, but we lived on the property. There's a home there. There's 10 acres. And they used to cut the fields there for silage. And that had been going on long before Jennifer and I moved there. And so that was just continuing all those years. So, you know, the land was pretty much cared for in that regard. And so they sold the dairy cows, and part of the dairy was converted over to vineyards. And that was an option for us to do the same thing. And I wanted to do food. You know, there's something about food, but I had a full-time job. I have a full-time job.
What do you do?
I'm an engineer for a company that makes airflow measurement equipment.
Oh, okay.
Or, as my wife says, he sells air. So that's my full-time job. Anyway, so then the big challenge was to figure out what I could grow there and manage with a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And so potatoes got first place.
And what was it about potatoes that made that doable?
They're very forgiving in terms of when you plant them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty forgiving on soil conditions. And they're very forgiving on harvesting.
Mm.
And the only thing that's not forgiving when it comes to potatoes around here is the gophers.
I was going to say, how do you deal with gophers?
Yeah. And fortunately, my mom is a champion gopher trapper.
Really?
Yeah. She's been trapping gophers since she was 6 years old.
How does she do it?
We use primarily a trap called the black box, but we also use Maccabees and cinch trap. Cinch trap is the one that you see in the vineyards, very common in the vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another trap that we use. It's all stainless steel, and it's made by a fellow down in Menlo Park, I think. I don't know the name of the trap, but it's another trap we like. And so when she was a little girl, she grew up on the dairy, on my great-grandfather's dairy on Peterson Road. And she, they had like a bounty thing. The city of Sebastopol would actually pay 10 cents for every gopher tail.
Really?
So she would, I think the deal was that her uncle Clarence set all the her and her cousins up with traps. And they'd set their traps in the morning, and they'd go to school, and then they'd get their traps. And they cut the tails off the gophers, dry them in the sun, put them in envelopes, and send them to, I think, some agency or something, the city of Sebastopol, and they would get a dime. I think it was a dime for each tail, which is a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
And then plus Uncle Clarence would give my mom a nickel for every. So they were very motivated. this is probably like the early 40s we're talking. So I got trained to be a gopher trapper. And so between the two of us, we took 227 off last year, and we're up to 145 this year.
In how much space?
About an acre.
About an acre.
So what I do is I'll rotate the potato patch each year. Uh-huh. I don't grow potatoes in the same place on the property.
Uh-huh.
So
that's really interesting, because I live... You know, somebody once told me that gophers are territorial, and there's no more than one gopher per acre or something like that. And all the mounds you see, they're really just from one acre. And I look outside at the 150, you know, little mounds that I see every day. It's like, I know it's not one gopher doing that.
Yeah.
So you just answered questions I've had for a long time.
And they'll
time.
Move around as holes get vacated, or, you know, we trap one. You know, sometimes it's only a matter of a day, and another gopher's moved in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put up owl boxes, and we just
Do you know this? Do you have owls living in the owl boxes?
Oh, yeah. In fact, the first box I put up was last year in April, and the day I put it up, an owl went in it. I sat out there in the evening as it got dark, and he flew into the box.
So I would like to, if I can figure out how to get them where they need to go, I would like to have a few owl boxes.
There's an easy way you can do it. You put it... put like just a regular fence post, you know, 4x4 or bigger, and drill a couple holes in it, and then put your long, like a 2x4, strong 2x4, attach your box to it, and with the two holes, you can just swing it up into position.
Ah.
And you don't, that way you can maintain it easier, don't have to climb, you know. And you should you should have it up about at least 15 feet and away from trees.
Away from trees.
Yeah.
Oh, so they don't want stuff around them.
Right. Generally, you don't want stuff around them. Mm-hmm. And then they're amazing. They're almost as prolific as the gophers are.
I've heard that they'll catch...
The barn owls, yeah.
Yeah, how many will they catch a night? Do you have...
I don't know. But they apparently very little of their time needs to be devoted to hunting because they're such efficient hunters.
Uh-huh.
So... But we like having them around there.
Yeah, it's wonderful to listen to them at night. Mm-hmm. It's really quiet and you can hear them calling to each other.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful.
Yeah.
So you brought some potatoes.
Yes.
Let's look at them.
Okay.
We have something that's purple.
Yeah, those are Viking purples.
And then we have...
Those are Princess Laurent fingerlings. I just dug those recently. And then these I dug today. Those are yellow fins.
Okay, yellow fins. Small yellow fins with the thin golden skin. And these, tell me their name again.
Princess Laurent fingerlings.
Princess Laurent fingerlings. And they seem very thin-skinned as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Viking purple. They seem, are they thicker skinned or do I just think that?
I think
that?
A little
yeah,
bit,
okay,
yeah.
And then we have this.
Yeah, those are more of the Viking Princess Laurent fingerlings. And we grew two fingerlings this year. We grew Austrian Crescent and then the Princess Laurent.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been growing Princess Laurent since the first year, and we have really good luck with that.
Mm-hmm. And what are the particular characteristics that you like about it?
Well, they're a little bit water. They like water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try to dry farm out there. This year, I did have to put a little bit of water on the fingerlings, which kind of shocked me because we had such a wet spring and everything. But we had that little dry spell. And sure enough, it dried out, and I had to get water up there. But the fingerlings are pretty prolific. I've had good luck with saving seed from the previous year's crop and mm-hmm. then planting them again. And as long as you take care of the soil, you know, they're amazing. They're,
mm-hmm.
And people really like them.
You know? How much do you grow?
Just an acre.
Oh, so you do grow the whole acre?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then this year we have 8 varieties on that acre.
Uh-huh. And then where do you sell them?
Oliver's and Sonoma Market. And I think Sonoma Market has them in both of their stores, the Sonoma store and the Glen Ellen store.
Mm-hmm.
But I deliver to the one in Sonoma. And then Tuesday, I'm bringing some up to Oliver's on Stony Point.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You know, interestingly, that Oliver's, at least this was true a year ago, that Oliver's sells more organic products than any of the other Oliver's.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I was
really...
Well,
it's a beautiful store.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But you would think maybe something, the one out in Bennett...
Montecito, is it?
Montecito, that's right, Montecito. You'd think maybe they were selling more, but no. They sell overall more organic products. And organic produce accounts for a really surprisingly large percentage of their sales. It's way above the national norm.
Yeah, and that Oliver's didn't start out that way.
No, it didn't.
but they started with organic... early on, from what mm-hmm. I understand, and it wasn't a good experience for them, but they just hung in there. And
well, it's taken a while to grow in popularity, not just with customers, but with farmers delivering what they want. And, you know, I talked at length to the general manager, Tom Scott. I should say congratulations to Oliver's. They just received the 2011 Friend of Agriculture Award at the Harvest Fair Award. So congratulations to them. But he was talking about how so many organic farmers, so many local farmers, they're used to the paradigm of the farmer's market.
Yeah.
And so supplying a grocery store and understanding the volume that you have to supply to a grocery store, you know, you can't come in and say, I have 2 flats of tomatoes that I didn't sell at the farmer's market. Do you want them? You have to be able to deliver, say, a pallet.
Right.
So it's just a whole different economic scheme.
Yeah.
But they're working with local farmers. And they're doing a great job.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's very different for them. For them, I know. I mean, I perceive myself as kind of a pain in the ass for them because of my full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't use the phone at work for my... you know, my mm-hmm. side business, which is potatoes. And so, you know, I'm not available for deliveries when a lot of other people are. You can't just ring me up on the phone. I'm pestering them. Please use email because then I can communicate with you.
Yeah.
Or call me at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning or after 4:30. Well, nobody's around.
Yeah.
And, But they hung in there, and mm-hmm. and it's been nice. It's fun. They do, you know, signage and promote the farm and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so,
they're really good about that. They give really good placement in the store to local products, which a lot of stores don't. And the other thing, I could never figure out why you go to certain local independent markets, and if you try to buy something local, it's more expensive than everything else. Oliver's gives really good placement, first of all. You don't have to hunt for it. And they give really good prices. So they're really encouraging their customers to not just buy local products, but to become loyal to local products. I think that's a really great thing. Yeah. We're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful, and we will be right back.
I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more. No, I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more. Makes me scrub the floor. Says she's 54.
It's Mouthful. We're not talking about Maggie's Farm. We're talking about Blankety Blank Farm on Blank Road with Denny Hunt. How do you like to eat potatoes?
I think my favorite is to toss them, like slice them up just slightly bigger than your standard French fry, mm-hmm. and toss them in a neutral oil. Like I like grapeseed oil, mm-hmm. and or I like coconut oil too.
Coconut oil is a good oil.
Yeah, and A little bit of salt and pepper, put them on a cookie sheet and bake them in the oven. That's my, I like that.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, potatoes, I can't, I don't know if I could, I don't know if I can name a way I don't like them. You know, I would have to think really, really hard before I came up with that. Potatoes are wonderful things.
We had a treat. There's a restaurant up in Hillsburg. It's closed now. Manzanita.
Oh, yeah, Manzanita.
And the chef up there, he featured us for, I guess they were doing like, feature a farmer and a winemaker every month. So anyway, he had us up for dinner, and he cut out a potato so it looked just like a cow bone. And then he put some type of a marrow mix or something in it with the sauce inside of it. And it was so good, and it was kind of shocking because it looked exactly like a cow bone. And anyway, it was a treat. That was fun.
I have wanted to do a dinner sometime. You know, 6-7 course dinner, all potatoes. I mean, I can have some other, ingredients, but have potatoes be central to every single course. And I'll do that one. I'll do that one of these days. How many potatoes do you? I mean, I would assume by weight, but what does an acre yield?
I'm not sure I figured that out yet because it's been 3 years, and each year has been very different. The first year. We kind of just rushed into it because we could, and I didn't do any soil prep or anything. We were very late. We planted, I think, June 11th, and I had a pretty good crop. And then the
if you planted June 11th, when did you harvest?
I think it was mid-late September. So, we have early and late varieties. The early varieties are like 90 days, and the late varieties are like 120 days. Mm-hmm. But with the potatoes... as long as you don't have, you know, really hard frosts or torrential rain, if you happen to leave them in for a couple weeks, it's not going to hurt the potato. Mm-hmm. In almost all cases, the only thing you risk is the gophers getting to them.
Yeah.
You know? And
so they don't have other pests really that bother them a whole lot.
Well, there's the Colorado potato beetle and
the ugliest creature ever created.
No. I think you're thinking of the potato bug.
Oh, okay. Yes, I am.
Yeah. And they will pick at the potatoes, but that's not really their favorite food. And we have them out there. And to tell you the truth, I don't know that I've ever been able to say for sure that this potato was damaged by a potato bug.
Okay.
So, but the Colorado potato beetle is the one that can get into potato patch and just wipe them out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I really don't know if that's something that's found in California or not.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm still learning. And then the following year in 2010, we grew in a different spot, and the soil was outstanding. And I think I had 120 foot rows, and I was getting about 125 pounds per row. And I think we seeded about 11 pounds per row.
Per row, okay.
So I think that was our best year. Last year was our best year.
Uh-huh.
And what I do is I cover crop in the fall, and I use LeBallister's got a mix. It's called Pennywise Soil Builder, and it's got oats, barley, vetch, and then three species of Austrian peas. And we put that in the fall, and it'll germinate with the fall rains. Not, it doesn't need very much rain to germinate. It'll get up maybe about 6 inches or so. And then as the colder weather comes in, it kind of stunts, you know, it just kind of stays 6-8 inches. And then in the spring, when things start to warm up, we get more rain, it just takes off. And it'll get up, you know, maybe 4 feet high, and just so thick you can barely walk through it. And then so we mow that, and then we disc that in.
You disc that in.
Yeah. And then we'll let that sit at least for 2 weeks before we go in and prep the field for planting, because I want all that to rot down into the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing we do is we, in the fall, we'll get the soil tested. And so what I follow is the agricultural advice that you get from, like, Acres magazine, Carrie Reams, Charles Walters. There's another fellow up in the Northeast. His name is Michael Estera, and he's wrote a book called The Ideal Soil. which I think Bang for the Buck is probably the best book to get on soils. And what's so nice about that book is it teaches you how to read and understand a soil test report and then how to make the corrections in your soil for the least amount of money.
Who does the report? Who does the test?
I think it's A&L Labs or Western Ag A&L. It's the what I've done in the past is just go up to Harmony
Farms.
I bring my sample in, and they send it off to that lab.
So there's a place you can actually go with that.
Right.
Awesome.
And what Harmony does will actually give you recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the fee they charge is to give you those recommendations. And I for 2 years now, I've actually had those recommendations checked mm-hmm. by others. And so far, so good. It's, you know, the recommendations are very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had good luck. The only problem with soil testing is it's kind of like a guideline. You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't really tell you exactly what it is. And then when you're doing a sample, even on an area that's small as an acre, you know, you're going around to 20 different places and you're mixing it all together.
Oh.
So what you're talking about is an average. So you could have a really bad spot in that 1 acre that's not going to show up on the test.
Yeah.
So, but it's better than guessing. And
mm-hmm.
Last year we had a really good crop. The mm-hmm. potatoes were gorgeous. This year's good, but not as good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you're growing some other things. Is someone else growing on your land?
Yeah, Katie.
Yeah.
Katie Hackmeyer, Red H Farm.
Tell me about that. Oh, Red H, yes.
Yeah.
I saw her at the Cotati Farmers Market.
Yeah, right.
So tell us about that. So you're leasing a portion.
Well, what we did is, let's see, I guess it's been two years now. I think last year was our first year. And we just get a box of, you know, we're like one of her customers. We
uh-huh.
get a box of vegetables every week, and that's the deal.
That's
she can
deal.
Grow there.
Uh-huh.
And we're very fortunate. We got two wells on the property. We got good water.
Mm-hmm.
And we set up my barn so she could do, with some sinks and stuff, so she could do her box preparations and
so
stuff there.
So she does
there.
A CSA.
Yeah, she does a CSA. Uh-huh. She's about 25 clients, and so it's worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to have her there, and because there's a lot of unused land,
mm-hmm.
you know. Because I just do all I can handle is an acre,
mm-hmm.
and so I just move that around, and she just kind of moves around too, you know.
And how much does she grow on?
I think it's about right around a half acre, grows at her parents' place, which has a little bit wetter conditions.
Uh-huh.
And then I think she also grows at her brother's or her sister's place. I think it's up on the northwest side of Santa Rosa where she takes advantage of the warmer
uh-huh.
climate.
You know? I think that's really interesting, and it's something that makes me feel optimistic about the future. I know I was at the Santa Rosa Farmers Market a couple of weeks ago, and I buy a lot from Beet Generation Farm.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they're wonderful, and they grow fabulous. I mean,
they're on Volkerts, right?
They're partly on Volkerts, but I was
there. That's Allie and...
I'll think of her name in a minute. I know her really well. I'm just blanking on her name. I can see her sweet face. She's always so up. And she was actually mentored by Jill Abrams.
Okay.
It was Abrams who had Crescent Moon Farm. And sadly, Jill, not sadly for Jill, sadly for us, we miss her. She decided she wanted to be closer to her family, and she's now moved back to Maine.
Oh, my God.
And is trying to farm in Maine.
Wow.
But... is it Lindsay? I think it starts with an L. I can't believe I'm blanking.
Libby.
There you go, Libby.
Yeah.
Beet Generation.
Yeah, because they're just up around the corner from us.
Well, they also are working on another parcel of land. I think it's off Calistoga Road, somewhere out there in East Santa Rosa. And I was there waiting for a customer to finish, and she was getting some padrones and some shishitos, which I was also getting. And it turns out that was the person whose land she grows on.
Oh, my God.
And her deal is she grows there, and the woman gets produce.
Yeah.
And I just think that's sort of what needs to happen.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, we're also trying to, for 2 years now, we've been trying to get somebody to do pastured chicken on the property. And we've gone through several candidates. We had one recently. She was going to come here with me tonight, but we just found out that her funding source organizational thing didn't work out.
Oh, too bad.
So, and it wasn't that she couldn't get the money. It was the timing.
The timing.
Yeah, the timing.
Yeah, and, we have a real need for that. We do not have enough pastured chicken in Sonoma County.
Right, right. And, you know, she's doing 50 birds a week now, and she's my – I'm not keeping a real close eye on it, but from what I hear so far is that they're all spoken for.
Yeah.
By the time her butcher day comes, they're all spoken for.
Yeah.
And but on this property, we have lots of water. It's southern-facing slope. It's a sandy loam soil. To continue doing potatoes there, I really need the animal input.
Oh.
And
oh, so
the chicken thing is real important.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm leaning towards chickens is because we already have an old chicken house that's on the property that's restorable. So that was part of the deal. I would let her do her chicken business there in exchange for her fixing up the old chicken house.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want some poop on my dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was the deal.
That was the deal. That's a great deal.
And the only thing I would charge her is if our utility bill got too high, then we would deal with it that way. But, yeah, since I have the full-time job, it gives me some – I have some restrictions, but I also have some benefits. Mm-hmm. You know, people say, well, how much money do you make on an acre of potatoes? I said, well, I'd probably break even if you don't count my labor. And I think that's probably about true. And it's probably continued to be true for a while.
Yeah.
But that's okay. But it'll be really okay – if I can help some other young farmers get going there, and that's a win-win
because
I need the animal input on there. And that way I can continue doing the potatoes. Uh-huh. Otherwise, I'm going to have to, you know, more calcium, more, you know.
Now, are you putting the word out there to potential
people? Yeah, we're on FarmLink. I've probably gone through like at least five different candidates since we started 2 years ago. And I've got two more that I talked to that just recently within the cat. See if we can pull a cat out of the bag before the rain starts.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Now you're also part of the Growers Exchange.
Hessel Grange.
Would you talk about that? I love that.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, it's kind of a euphemism for a farmer's market, but we don't want to compete with farmer's markets.
Mm-hmm.
We want to really keep it as a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenon, what you want to call it, but it's well supported by the Grange there in terms of them letting us use their facility. We don't mm-hmm. use the building; they just have a little picnic area off to the side, and so every Wednesday from 4:30 to 6:30, we just meet up there and trade produce and mm-hmm.
Do they also sell?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who doesn't have something can come.
Yes.
Or maybe not.
Yes. And then one of the fun things that we do is, like, I have a donkey and a mule at home, and my donkey's trained to do cart work. So I rush home from work, and I hitch him up to a cart, and I put potatoes in the cart, and Jennifer follows me up the road with her flashers on, and it's a half a mile up the road from our house. So there's a donkey in a cart and potatoes there every Wednesday.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and we start in June, and we end in October. I think we're going to end sometime in October this year.
Is it okay for strangers to show
up? Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we're just, it's kind of a touchy situation in terms of, you know, we don't ask anybody to sign up. We don't charge.
Mm-hmm.
We don't require some of the things that the farmer's market.
Well, it's not
require.
A farmer's market. I mean, it
Correct.
Sounds a little bit like not exactly like the Bodega Bay, the new Bodega Bay market.
Yeah.
But there's the new Bodega Bay market,
okay.
And it's not a certified farmer's market. They're getting they don't have to pay for the land. They do charge stall fees, but the stall fees go to the Bodega Bay Community Association, and it's their land, and it helps them with community outreach.
Yeah.
So it's not the same with certifications and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, excuse my nervousness
it,
but I don't know where we fall in on all the ordinances and laws and all that stuff. We're just
farmers can exchange their produce, and if they can't, there's a problem.
Well, we heard about the activities down south and up in the what was it, Rossum?
Oh, the raw.
Yeah, Rossum,
the raw milk.
And then there was a family with a goat share up in Willits, and
what happened with that?
They got shut down by the state.
You know, big agriculture has been lobbying against small farmers, which is so totally insane.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you luck. And
thanks. I hope I don't need it.
No, luck to thrive.
Thank you.
Luck to thrive.
Thanks.
You also do some classes, don't you?
Yeah. In the spring, before things get too crazy, we did two potato growing classes, mm-hmm. and that was so successful. And of course, the subject of gophers came up. So my mom taught two gopher trapping classes.
She did. Yeah. Oh wow! What's your mom's name?
Nancy.
So her name was statue to her.
Yeah, she. And we had a surprise birthday party for her. So she's proud to say that she's been trapping gophers for 70 years. And she got on my mule and went for a ride for her birthday. And she says, I think it's been 40-something years since she used to ride horses all over out there. Mm-hmm. So she got to ride on my mule. And so between the two of us this year, we've trapped 145. And it's just something you have to do. Otherwise, the losses. We just finished digging out the yellow fins. And on the west side of the field, I think our losses were around 40%.
Oh, my God.
Just from gophers.
And you're trapping so many.
Oh, we're trapping. Yeah, we got two today. She was setting traps while we were harvesting, and she got two today. And our gophers, we used to just toss them, you know, let the predators or the vultures get them or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. And
even turkey vultures have to eat.
Yes. But I didn't even know how this happened, but somebody who's involved with wildlife rescue found out about us. I guess maybe the gopher class. I'm not really sure. But anyway, she comes and we put the gophers in the freezer. And she comes and picks them up. She buys potatoes, too. And she takes the frozen gophers and they're rehabilitating a badger. And so our gophers for the past, I think month have been going to rehabilitate a badger.
Oh, that's great. I thought you were going to say wildlife rescue heard and they came and they didn't want you to kill the gophers.
No,
they're buying them as perfect.
Yeah.
That is, I love wildlife rescue. I think they're a great organization.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit? It's a squeamish subject for me.
Okay.
You know, there's certain, not everyone can do everything, and I'm not good with flowing blood. What is involved in trapping a gopher?
Well, most of the traps are pretty benign in that regard. They don't always kill them, but most of the time the gophers will end up dead after being trapped, especially if they've been in there for a period of time.
Uh-huh.
So you just have to, you know, release the gopher from the trap and it could go straight into, you know, a trash bag or whatever.
Okay.
You know,
so you don't have to open it up and then take it off the spike and there's
No. They're capture type traps that, you know, capture the gopher's entire body. And usually when that happens, it kills them.
Okay.
Not always, but,
have you ever opened a trap and one's still alive?
Oh, that's common. Yeah, that's common. But they're usually injured. And, you know, if you're when Katie started with us, she was, you know, I'd be on the other side of the property and I could hear her screaming. And I'd have to run up there and let the gopher out of the trap. And after, I think, one season of growing and her experiencing the losses that she had mm-hmm. with her growing with these gophers, she ended the season out there, you know, hand-to-hand combat, shovels. She wasn't going to take it anymore. Uh-huh. And we'll never get rid of them. You know, they're a big part of, I mean, they do beneficial things for your land. You know,
is it that they aerate it?
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay. Because uh-huh. I was thinking they couldn't just be all bad.
No. No, they serve a purpose. And I've heard even when there's high concentrations of owls, the owls will adjust their behaviors and stuff or disperse or whatever. Because they're not going to wipe out all the gophers either. That's their food source. So, there's a lot to learn about and from nature. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
it's really interesting and it's a lot of fun. And but we're going to keep trapping the gophers because mm-hmm. we have to.
Well, I think your mom sounds like more people need to know about her. Your mom. She should do gopher class. She should do more gopher trapping classes. She should do them like at Harmony Farms or Ace Sebastopol Hardware.
Yeah.
Because Sebastopol Hardware is doing classes now. They're doing classes in canning. Doing classes in canning, they could certainly do classes in gopher trapping.
And you've heard about, I think, Doug, the gopher guy?
I've heard. Yeah. I don't know him, but I've heard about him.
He teaches, too.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, he teaches, too. And he does things a little different than we do. But he's in the business, and, you know, he's very successful.
Every now and then I thought, well, If I could sell a, if I could get a nice book contract, maybe I could hire Doug the Gopher Guy for a season. Because I think at some point I'm going to break my leg by just walking out at night or something, and
well, the other
gopher
thing,
hole appears in a place where it hasn't been.
Yeah, and the other thing you'll find with like out where we're at with a lot of gophers is that's what the badgers eat. So you not only have the regular gopher holes, but we also have badger holes out there.
Those are badger holes?
Yeah, the big ones are
badgers. I thought, my God, how big is that gopher?
No. The badgers are hunting the gophers.
So we have badgers here.
Oh, yeah.
That's so, you know, sometimes you hear barking. That's because I bring little Joey. He likes to come to the studio, and he's a miniature dachshund, but dachshunds are badger hunters.
Exactly.
So that's interesting. So the big holes are badgers.
Yeah.
I just saw one a couple days ago in my yard, and I'm serious, I was terrified. Oh my God, is there nuclear waste under here growing giant gophers? And on that note, we are going to have to say goodbye. Time flies when you're having fun and mouthful. So to get your potatoes, blankety-blank form, go to Oliver's. If you're over in Sonoma, go to Sonoma Market or Sonoma Market in Glen Ellen.
Right.
Only two places right now, correct?
Yeah. And then Oliver's on Stony Point, doing the delivery there Tuesday.
Okay. And then if you happen to be in the neighborhood of Hessel Grange on a Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah. Or
you see
by
some
the
people
farm.
Gathered.
We're open on the weekends.
Oh, you do? You're open on the weekends.
Yeah. We're usually open on the weekends or even weekday evenings you can come by. We have a little sandwich board thing that we stick out on the weekends. And our website's blankety-blank.biz.
There you go.
Easy to remember. And we're always updating it and putting pictures and videos. And in fact, there's a video of Adam and Ryan digging the potatoes with their potato plow. There's a video on our website of that. If you've never seen draft horses dig potatoes,
cool,
you can go there and watch that.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for bringing these beautiful potatoes too.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thanks to you for sticking with us. Be sure to tune in next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, here on KRCB.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing, to the Lord that praises me, it's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. To what the preacher says, to the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some flip cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says, to the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some flip cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.